Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the magical isle of Vashon, broadcasting live, unrehearsed and unscripted from the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio. This is the voice of Vashon, 101.9 on the frequency modulated band. And it is streaming live all over the world from Singapore on one side of the world, where I believe I still have some listeners, to Stockholm, the kingdom, the capital of the Kingdom of Sweden, where I know I have some listeners, and all of these places in between, like Clifton and Lothian and all of these other places where Captain Joe's people hang their sea bags when they are not themselves at sea. I send greetings out today to all of those who are maritime historians, and a little bit farther down astern in the broadcast, I'm going to talk again a little bit about the Steamship Historical Society, because I've had two contacts from two of the lovely ladies who work there and who are not themselves yet maritime people, but they are rapidly becoming so, because each exchange that I have with them, I get to deposit pieces of nautical arcana and add to their vocabulary. So all of those who labor in the vineyards of maritime history. And it's so important that we keep up with those things, because it is from those things that we learn from the past so that we hopefully do not repeat the mistakes in the future. The binnacle list this week, I continue to keep myself on it because I still am not hearing very well. In fact, I'm hardly hearing at all. And that is as a result of a upper respiratory infection that lodged itself inside me while I was on this last trip. And it has affected a number of other of Captain Joe's people as well. In addition, the members of the binnacle list who are of the senior chronological age bracket, warrant officers and master chiefs in particular, seem, as they are reported to me through the Coast Guard channel, seem to me to be improving. And so, therefore, all is well on the binnacle list, with the exception of your captain, who seems to have come to all stop in the clearing of my head so that I can once again hear. Is this to be a permanent condition which is going to require the installation of some electronic augmentation? One certainly hopes not. But if that's what has to be done, that, of course, is what will be done. I mentioned that some of the people that are on the binnacle list are warrant officers, and I have remarked before that my raising up by chief petty officers came in my second tour after graduation from the academy, when I became my captaincy for the first time. But before that, I was influenced by several warrant officers, and warrant officers are a grade between the commissioned officer, and there are commissioned warrant officers. The term warrant officer goes back at least to the Royal Navy, and it goes back to probably the late 1600s, 1700s, and it is an officer who holds not a commission. I held a commission, the president's commission. A warrant officer holds a warrant, which is a different kind of documentation. They are no less skilled, and in fact, they are incredibly skilled people. And many, many chief petty officers become warrant officers. And we'll talk some more about that maybe when we talk a little bit about ranks and ratings and things like that. But I take this opportunity to recognize the influence that warrant officers had over me, in particular in my very first seagoing trip, my first seagoing assignment out of the academy. The Glacier reunion, I had not mentioned a couple things about that, which I hereby do. And the first is to say that in the remarks that I was invited to make, I had received a copy of a poem by Dr. Sam Green. Now, Dr. Green is a former Coast Guard quartermaster, and he served in the buoy tender Black Hawk that maintained many of the aids on the coast of Vietnam, and thus was responsible for, in part, our safety. After he left the service, as I believe he was either a second class or first class quartermaster, and chose not to remain in the service as a career, he made his living, I think, as both a doctor of philosophy and as a poet. He was one of the poet laureates. He may have been the first poet laureate of the state of Washington. He lives on an island in Washington State now. And he has written a number of poems about his service life. One of them had to do in particular with, he was paying tribute to, he was at this time a third class quartermaster in the Coast Guard cutter Black Hawk. And he was paying tribute to a first class who had been one of his teachers. And I had asked him for, and he had sent to me he had sent me that poem, and I was able to read it as part of my remarks. It is a lovely piece, and yet I am unable to read it on the air because it contains, I think, just about every one of the words that I am not allowed to use. And if he doesn't have all of them, he has enough of them there that precludes me from reading the poem. Yet one of the elements of this poem is one that is so much a part of my own professional and personal life, and that is the concept of a shipmate. A shipmate is he or she who puts mates and ship before him or herself. And he talks about this in the poem, and at one point in the poem, his teacher, his first class quartermaster, is saying to Sam, his third class student, always have a sharp knife with a marlin spike. And at this point in the reading of the poem, I reached into my starboard pocket and I pulled out my rigging knife. And if the marlin spike on it had been spring-loaded, I had wanted to press the button and have the marlin spike all of a sudden spring out. But alas, I was holding in one hand the microphone, in the other I was holding sort of between my teeth the text of Dr. Green's poem, and in the third hand I was holding aloft so that all could see it, the rigging knife, not a GI issue K-bar rigging knife, by the way, but one that has a rosewood handle. A little bit of Captain Lee sheer elegance there. And as the knife came out and I waved it as part of the reading of the text of Dr. Green's poem, I could hear this little gasp go up from especially the bosun's mates. And I went all the way through to the end of the poem. It is truly a lovely piece. And so I had printed out a couple of extra copies. After my remarks, I had told the gathering that I was to be followed by Vice Admiral Sandra Stowes, who has written the book on leadership, and about whom I have talked on this broadcast before. She and I have quite different ideas as to how you get the reluctant to do that which they do not want to do in very dangerous situations. She's written a whole book of hundreds of pages about it. I just have three basic sentences that encapsulate all of it to me, and that's how I've lived my whole professional life. You carry out the mission. You take care of the people that are given to you to carry out that mission. The good general makes sure that his men and horses are fed before himself, and the captain shall show no fear. So I had said that Admiral Stowes was going to come along behind me, and that I would not leave her a great deal of mucked up brash ice in my wake that she would have to plow through. At the end of my remarks, I said, and I will be staying here for a while, and anybody who'd like to come up and tell or exchange stories, I'd be happy to do that. At the end of the dinner, I was sitting, and there were a number of people that did come up around and gathered around, and one was a retired senior chief bosun's mate. And he had his wife with him. Part of my remarks was then, and always, almost always is, if I ever leave it out, shame on the captain. I recognize those who wait while we go to sea, while I take their men to sea. And they have the confidence that I will always bring everybody home safe. And so the wife came up to me and she said, "Captain Joe, I want you to know how much I appreciate the remarks that you made about those who wait." And she said, "Could I take a photograph of the poem that you read from Sam Green, from Dr. Green?" And I said, "I have an extra copy here. I'll be happy to let you have that." And I gave it to her. So I'm saying all of this because for Dr. Green, I want him to know, and I want all of Captain Joe's people to know, that the work that he did, the recognition that he gave to those who had taught him, aligns exactly with the recognition that I tried to give to those who taught me. It was a great, great event. Admiral Stowes did not disappoint. She recognized her shipmates in Glacier. She had sailed in Glacier right out of the academy. She recognized those who were in the audience, and she did, in fact, refer to some of the lengthy things that she has in her book. She had available the book, should one want to buy it, and have it signed. So I came away from that whole event feeling really good about the work that we did together. And Dr. Green, if you're listening today, I want you to know what a great reception your work had at that function. Last week, I went to the citizenship ceremony for a much-loved friend. It was a sort of not last-minute insertion into the itinerary. But what it did mean was that on that particular trip, I did 7 flight segments with United Airlines. And out of that came a number of things about which United Airlines needs to do some corrective action. And I'm going to send a letter from the captain to the head of United Airlines, the president and chief executive officer, whomsoever he or she may be. Two of those flight segments involved getting me from the place where we had the Glacier Reunion, which was New London, and from the Theodore F. Green International Airport at Providence, Rhode Island, to Grand Rapids, Michigan. A trick if there ever was one. 2 flight segments to get there, and then 2 flight segments to get back to Dulles, which was where I was going to have the last 3 family visits before I came back to the magical Isle of Vashon. At Grand Rapids is where the headquarters of the Federal Court of the Western District of Michigan. And the presiding judge, senior judge, the chief judge for the Western District of Michigan, convened a court in this big hall, convened a session of his court. And that was where the citizenship ceremony was to be held. I've never been to something like this before, and I was very interested as to what was going to happen, and I was not disappointed at all. It was an absolutely splendid day, and it went something like this. First of all, the clerk of the court came out, and she gave the traditional call, "Oye, oye, all ye who have business before this court, gather close. Come near, and you will be heard." And then the judge comes out, and he is wearing not only his judicial robes, but he's also wearing the regalia of a doctor of laws with the 3 chevrons, or the 3 stripes on each one of the sleeves, and the hood. And that tells me that he takes all of this very seriously. And he walks out and he sits down, and I'm thinking, what a wonderful way. And then he's wearing white socks. A little Midwest homie touch there. And then the next thing that happened was the color guard. It was a ROTC, a junior ROTC unit from a local high school, and the kids were absolutely immaculate, and they had drilled, and they had practiced, and they had the manual of arms down exactly right, and their uniforms were impeccable. Absolutely beautiful. And they came marching out, and they had the American flag, of course, and next to that, the flag of the state of Michigan. The commands were sharp and crisp. The movements were done exactly as if they had trained and rehearsed them, which of course they had. They came out with the colors. Then they came to present arms, done exactly right. We were all standing by this time. And then the national anthem, played by a string quartet of high school kids. If there is anything that is going to bring tears to the eyes of the most hardened Master Chief Bosun's mate, or of your Captain Joe, it is to see a color guard that is drilled and precise and clean and respectful and just about perfect. And then to have the national anthem played by a string quartet of high school kids. No popular singer getting off key, none of that. Who struck John? The people singing were the people, the families of those who were about to become American citizens. At the end of the national anthem, the color guard retired the colors, and the judge got up and he said, "You all may now be seated." And he said, "I will now administer the oath of citizenship." All, there were 220 new citizens. They all stood and held up their right hand. And up on the screen were two things. The first one was the seal of the court. And in the seal of the court, it has the American eagle. In the left talons, the eagle is holding a sheaf of arrows. In the right talon, or starboard side to us sailors, he's holding a, I think those are palm leaves, some sort of branches. Olive branches, that's it, olive branches. And his head is always turned to the right. The symbolism of this is that I seek peace, but in order to maintain it, if necessary, I will turn my head in the other direction and use the arrows. Underneath the seal, which was projected up onto the screen, was the text of the oath of citizenship. It's a little bit longer than the oath that I took, than that all of you who have served and who are Captain Joe's people who have served. It is a little bit longer. It includes a few things. One of the things it includes is, I promise that I will serve in the armed forces of the United States of America if called upon to do so. Each one of the people being sworn in takes that oath, which includes the customary and necessary obligation to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. Again, the same that all of us who have served, the same oath that we all took, but added onto by these other things. At the end of the oath, judge says, "Now all may be seated," and he delivers a few remarks. And these remarks are both predictable and necessary. They are a reminder to all of us. And he reminded all of us who have been born into citizenship in this great land, the great land that I have served since I was 17, and which is true of many of you. He reminds all of us of our continuing obligations, the obligations of citizenship. And at the end of his remarks, he said, "Now, each of you will walk across the stage. Your name will be announced. You'll be presented with your certificate of citizenship. And then, if you so choose, we'll have a photograph together." They all stood up. And it was then that I was really struck with the fact that from, in terms of skin tone, from the blackest of the black to the whitest of the white, and from 60 different countries, from Afghanistan to Yemen, there were 200 people, to over 200 people who had worked their butts off to earn the right to be called United States citizens, American citizens. I was born into it. I was born into it, and so many of you were as well. It was just a glorious day. I've taken some time on this because it struck me right into the very depths of my black heart. And it made me appreciate even more what it was that I was born into and that these people so desperately wanted. Many of the women were dressed in the native costume, not costume, that's a bad word, in the native dress of their countries. One woman from Brazil, I think it was wearing a carnival outfit, and she did a little carnival dance across the stage. But everybody was dressed, and many people had small American flags because in the packet that each one of them was given was a small American flag. I don't see how, and then after everybody had gone, had their photograph taken with the judge, then we all made the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I don't think we do it in schools much anymore. It's a shame. But in any case, we all did it together. And for those who didn't know the text of it, it was flashed up in the screen right underneath the seal of the court, showing the eagle looking toward the olive branches. And then the judge said to the clerk, adjourn the court. And thus ended an official session of the court of Western, federal court of Western Michigan. And I was just so delighted with the whole day. And my congratulations and best wishes to all of those new citizens. And I was struck also by reflecting on my own background. My own background, my mother's family is a very old Virginia and Maryland family. They go back to the 1600s. My father's family are German immigrants that came over in 1870. I know the ship in which my ancestor came. So all of us, in one way or another, are immigrants in this country. And those of us who were born here have as much of an obligation as those who took that oath of citizenship a week ago. It was just a wonderful day. And I regret not that I've taken so much time to talk about it here today. The time has come, and far too quickly, and with so many more things that I wanted to get to, but I indulged myself in a little bit of patriotic time with all of you. Because every now and then we somehow think that people that come here, not all people that come here want anything except what you and I were born to. And they're willing to do the extra hard work to make that happen. And so my much loved friend Janet is now an American citizen. Congratulations and love, Janet. This is your Captain Joe. Up in the captain's chair. I am on station and watching properly. I am not hearing very well yet. Maybe next week I'll be hearing better. But my spirit is good. My heart is full of love for all mankind. And that was conditioned by the way that that judge conducted that ceremony in such a significant and meaningful way. So this is your Captain Joe. As always, I am on station and watching properly. As always, all of you are in the palm of my hand. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again, and we'll meet again here, or if not here, wherever I happen to be in the world. Watch the six of those for whom you are responsible. Take care of each other. We'll meet again here next week.